Okay, Psalm 45, kind of on the marriage supper of the Lamb, 46, tribulation, 47, second coming, 48, dealing with the heavenly Jerusalem. Psalm 48. Great is the Lord and greatly to be praised in the city of our God, in the mountain of his love. No, holiness. That's his number one attribute. He's holy. God is holy. Holy, holy, holy Lord God Almighty. In the mountain of his holiness. Beautiful for situation. The joy of the whole earth is Mount Zion on the sides of the north, the city of the great king. Okay, the sides of the north. Okay, and so you go out at night and notice the North Star and keep looking past that. You'd be going ahead and looking towards the throne of God. This idea of the North, if you would look in Isaiah chapter 14. Isaiah 14. Verse 12 is Lucifer, the only occurrence of the word Lucifer in the Bible. And he says five times, I will. Verse 13, he says, For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Okay, but 15, he's going down into the pit. Okay, and so the sides of the north, another one, Psalm 75, verse 8. Psalm 75, verse 8. I'm sorry, verse 6 and 7. Okay, for promotion cometh neither from the east, nor from the west, nor from the south, but God is judge. He putteth down one and setteth up another. Okay, it's a no-brainer which one's left out. The only ones that miss that are the Hebrew scholars and the Greek scholars in the colleges. Okay, they probably think the south is some other term. I forget what they call it. Okay, Psalm 48. So that's where the throne of God is. And so you have the counterfeit. Most any cultures will have this counterfeit where somebody is fat that comes from the north, and he knows everybody. He knows when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake, and he can travel at the speed of light. Okay, and he's got all these gifts for people, and he's wearing red and he's wearing white. Because he's pure and he's wearing red because it's symbolism of the blood of Christ. And you find this clown all around the world. In the pagan cultures, he'd be referred to as the sun god. And he's got little elves. Look up the word elf in the 1828 dictionary, and that is an unclean spirit. The devil, that's what it says. The word human is like that also. The word human. In the old dictionaries, it refers to a monster. We use it as a man or a woman, but the definition referred to as a monster. Okay, the Bible term for you and I would be man or woman. Okay, human, humus, coming from the dirt, no big deal. But Santa Claus is a counterfeit of Jesus Christ. He even says the same words. He says, ho ho. You find that in Zechariah chapter 6. So he's a counterfeit of the Lord. Take the word Santa, take the N at the middle, put it in, you've got Satan. And I don't know what it's called, maybe some of you know. When you take a word and jumble up the letters, you still get the same point across. Okay, and Satanists are known for doing that, things like that. So there's old Santa, we'll hit him before Halloween. So, Verse 3, God is known in her palaces for a refuge. Okay, the throne of God or the New Jerusalem or the heavenly city has palaces, and John 14, verse 2 says has mansions. For lo, the kings were assembled, they passed by together. What kings? They saw it, and so they marveled. They were troubled and hasted away, these kings. Fear took hold upon them there, and pain as of a woman in travail, these kings. So these kings are fearful when they see this God and his strength coming from the palaces. Verse 7, thou breakest the ships of Tarshish with an east wind. What's that got to do with it? Okay, and so there's, it kind of takes a detour there. It's kind of strange. Okay, the ships of Tarshish with an east wind. There's a cross reference we have there for Ezekiel 27, verse 5. And I don't think anybody knows exactly what's being taught here. We can guess, we can kind of get an idea. But Ezekiel has a series of chapters that focus on Satan or the Antichrist or whatnot. Okay, and starting Ezekiel 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, and even 32. So seven straight chapters that these chapters are dealing with the devil or the Antichrist. In chapter 27, verse 25, it refers to the ships of Tarshish, like we read in Psalms. The ships of Tarshish did sing of thee in the market. Okay, well, who are they singing about? Well, you go back at the beginning, chapter 27. The word of the Lord came again unto me, saying, now the Son of Man take up a lamentation for Tyrus, and say unto Tyrus, O thou that art situate at the entry of the sea, which art a merchant of the people, for many isles. Thus saith the Lord God, O Tyrus, thou hast said, I am perfect beauty. Now right there, does that statement sound familiar? Ezekiel 28, Lucifer. Okay, and so this has something to do with a satanic kingdom. If you run down through those cities, most of those cities are almost all those cities are Muslim territories today. They're around the Mediterranean Sea. You have in verse 10 Persia, that's Iran, Lud and Foot in thine army. Those are the Western Roman Empire. You have in 11 the men of Arphad, I think that's Morocco, Tarshish, Javan, Tubal, and Meshech. Most people will run that with Soviet Union, but no, I'd say that's down around the Muslim territory. Verse 15, men of Dedan, that's Arabia, Saudi Arabia. 16, you got Syria. 18, Damascus. Again, Dedan in verse 20. And verse 21, Arabia, princes of Kedar. And all these people are, all these things are merchants, and there's something to do with the ships of Tarshish. The ships of Tarshish is something that's a little bit strange, seems strange. And I don't know if you've ever studied at all what is known by people as the lost city of Atlantis. If I had a guess, I would say that's what we're reading about, the lost city of Atlantis. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth. Verse 2, and the earth was void, and darkness filled the earth. So God created heaven and earth, and then he allowed Satan or Lucifer to rule the world for a time period there. maybe 2,000 years max. It had to be 2,000, I would say, would be the max. And then God destroyed the satanic kingdom. And then Genesis 1:2, he flooded the earth by destroying satanic kingdom. And then Genesis 1:3, a recreation taken place, the 6 days of creation. And then he turned around and told Adam to be fruitful, multiply, and replenish the earth. Why did he tell him to replenish the earth? You only find that in the King James Bible. The word plenish means to fill. Replenish means to fill again. Then he told, and then you've got from Adam until the flood was about 1,700 years, around in that range. The flood was around 2,300 BC. He flooded it again. Okay, and then he told Noah, be fruitful, multiply, and replenish the earth. So what did he destroy both times? He destroyed a violent kingdom, satanic kingdoms. If you would look in Genesis chapter 9, is it that he, the first time he flooded the earth, Genesis 9 verse 11, okay, Genesis 9, verse 11, he says, I will establish my covenant with you, neither shall all flesh be cut off anymore by the waters of a flood. So was that Noah's flood where it destroyed the flesh? And then, neither shall there anymore be a flood to destroy the earth. Genesis 1, 2. One destroyed the earth, the other destroyed the flesh. But there's something weird going on in there, and there's something beyond us. And so you have the lost city of Atlantis, and that's what the Atlantic Ocean is named after. That's what Atlanta, Georgia is named after. It's a pagan god. And this lost city of Atlantis supposedly where they worshipped a red dragon. Okay, and this culture has gone throughout the world. And if the Bible is not true, why are these people have a fatuation with a red dragon? Because the Bible dictates what's going on. Okay, back in Psalms 48. So, you know, like I said, I don't know if you can kind of guess on some of these things, but I don't know if you're going to figure it all out. But I would dare say there's something bigger out there than you and I can imagine. Beyond our imagination of a lot of these things. Okay, verse 7 of Psalm 48. Thou breakest the ships of Tarshish with an east wind. As we have heard, so have we seen in the city of the Lord of hosts, the city of our God. God will establish it forever and then seal us. So is this the second coming of Christ when he breaks the ships of Tarshish and then he punishes Leviathan, the piercing serpent, even Leviathan, he'll slay the red dragon that's in the sea. And so that's about the second coming of Christ. More of that's written in Revelation 19. Okay, and then he says, we have thought of thy loving kindness, O God, in the midst of thy temple. Okay, so one thing we should be doing in church is meditating on God's loving kindness to us. And boy, he has been gracious to us. Okay, if God just had salvation where each of us got saved and he dumped us in a ditch and left us there for the rest of our time, that would still be the grace of God. But he's done much more than that. We have thought of thy loving kindness, O God, in the midst of thy temple. According to thy name, O God, so is thy praise unto the ends of the earth. Thy right hand is full of righteousness. The right hand of God is the Lord Jesus Christ. It's full of righteousness. During the ministry of the Lord Jesus, he allowed his enemies at one time, he said, which of you convinces me of sin? I mean, the Lord would set these guys up. These guys were hypocrites and Pharisees. Bunch of two-faced liars. I mean, one time he had a man that was in need of healing. I forget what ailment he had or what disease he had. And it was on a Sabbath day. And he set this guy right in the middle of all these clowns. And he said, okay, is it right to save a man or destroy a man in a Sabbath day? He gave him an opportunity. Should I heal this man or should I not? It's the Sabbath. Now, if you were sincerely in your beliefs, wouldn't you speak up? You don't want them to do the wrong thing, right? Why didn't these guys say anything? Because they were liars, hypocrites. They didn't say anything, so he healed the man, and then he went out and started talking. Wrong time to talk. You should have talked when you had the opportunity. In John 8, verse 41, Jesus Christ said to those Pharisees, which of you convinces me of sin? Why didn't they point a sin out in his life? Come on, if you're going to ask his friends, the disciples, you know, about the sins of the Lord, you know, that people would say, oh, they're just biased towards him. They're not going to say anything. You know, but how about his enemies when they didn't say anything? They had the opportunity. He gave them the opportunity. Okay, and so that just shows the hypocrisy of these people. Okay, and that's why they delivered him for envy. Verse 11, he says, let Mount Zion rejoice. Let the daughter of Judah be glad because of thy judgments. Now, a lot of times when somebody gets judged, a sinner gets judged, or somebody gets loses a court case, you know, or something like that, or gets judged where justice is served, a lot of people say, oh, we should feel sorry for him. You know? No, we shouldn't feel sorry for him. We should be glad because justice is served. You say, well, that's vengeance. No, it's not. It's justice. I know there's a fine line in some of those things, but it says here, the daughters of Judah were glad, be glad because of thy judgments. Okay, and so in Revelation chapter 19, when you have the battle of Armageddon, the devil's thrown in hell, and the Antichrist defeated, and blah, 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 people in heaven are rejoicing about it. They ain't crying about it. They're rejoicing about it. Why? Because God gets the glory. Verse 12, it says, walk about Zion. Walk around the city. Go around about her. Tell the towers thereof. Tell the towers. Count the towers. Mark ye well her bulwarks. Consider her palaces, that ye may tell it to the generation following. For this God is our God forever and ever. He will be our guide even unto death. Now, because the word seal is in there, something to do with the tribulation and the second coming, and so a person can justly assume that the our God is referenced to the nation of Israel. This God is our God forever and ever, and he will be our guide. Guide them through the tribulation even unto death. Okay, now Psalm 49 starts off seeming to be just a very simple, practical psalm. Eventually does throw in, as usual, some things about the tribulation and second coming. It's just like it's a broken record in the Bible. It just constantly comes back to that theme. Okay, but Psalm 49, verse 1. Hear this, all ye people. Give ear, all ye inhabitants of the world, both low and high, rich and poor, together. Okay, there are, when a person reads through the Bible, you ask yourself two questions. Who's talking? To whom is he talking? Like you get a letter in the mailbox, you see who it's addressed to and who it's coming from. So there are some things in the Bible where it's directed to the Jews directly. There are some things directed to the Gentiles. There are a couple passages addressed to wives. There are some passages that address the fathers. There are some passages that are addressed to everybody, like this one. Isaiah 34 is another passage like that. It's directed to everybody. He says, O earth, 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 hear the word of the Lord. Okay? That one's Jeremiah 22:29. Isaiah 34, he wants all the world to know in Isaiah 34 that God is going to make Saudi Arabia and that area into a burning, fiery pitch someday. He wants everybody to know that. Okay, and so here's a psalm that is written to you and for you. All of the Bible is for you, but not all of the Bible is to you. And a person, in order to be honest about these things, they need to follow the context and ask yourself these questions as you're reading through it. Okay, now he's going to get into the mindset of people who deal or have a trust in riches. Okay, so he says, "Hear this, all ye people, give ear, all ye inhabitants of the world, both low and high, rich and poor, together. My mouth shall speak of wisdom, and the meditation of my heart shall be understanding. I will incline mine ear to a parable. I will open my dark saying upon the harp." Okay, the parable is a parallel story. You have one story parallels another. Sometimes it's called an analogy. Sometimes some people will call it a similitude. Okay, and this is one of the fastest ways to learn, to understand something. This is the best way to teach. Okay, the best way to teach is to take something that people understand already and compare that to something you're trying to teach them. An analogy, parable. Okay, Jesus did not start speaking in parables until the nation of Israel had officially rejected him. Then he started speaking in parables. Those parables, anybody with common sense and a humble mind and a sincere heart, they could figure out the parables. The ones that didn't, they couldn't figure out the parables. Okay, and so these parables, or analogy, or similitudes, are the quickest way to learn something. So this is a parable. This is going to be a repeat story. It's going to be repeated throughout history. Verse 5, he says, "Wherefore should I fear in the days of evil, when the iniquity of my heels shall compass me about?" Okay, should I fear when my punishment comes? Yeah, I had it coming. Wherefore should I fear? Verse 6, "They that trust in their wealth and boast themselves in a multitude of their riches, none of them can by any means redeem his brother nor give to God a ransom for him." Why would he say that? It's because that's what people do who are wealthy and boast in their wealth, is that they buy people off. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 8, 9, 10, verse 19 says that money answereth all things. Money talks. These people have gone through life, once they had their wealth, as they use their wealth, okay, bragging about their wealth, boasting in it, and they use it to buy police officers off, judges, dare we say politicians. You know, like Obama, McCain, all those guys, big money. These people, they've been doing this all their life, most of their life, and so they think that when they die, they can buy off God. And of course, the Lord's going to laugh at them. Okay, verse 8, he says, "For the redemption of their soul is precious, and it ceaseth forever." Okay, what's in their mindset? Verse 7, what is in a mindset of an individual who is wealthy, who boasts themselves in a multitude, and they trust in their wealth? Okay, the mindset is they're used to buying people off, verse 7. Verse 9, that he should live forever and not see corruption. That's what they think. They think they're above things. "For he seeth that wise men die, likewise the fool and the brutish person perish, and leave their wealth to others." Usually the government and some attorney. Okay, they see that. So what are they going to do? Their inward thought is that their houses shall continue forever, and their dwelling places to all generations. They call their lands after their own names, the Trump Palace. the Trump Casino. Okay, and what he's doing is he thinks he's going to live forever by doing that. And when he dies and goes to hell, he's not going to split hell wide open. He's going to land in hell like a pebble in the Atlantic Ocean. Okay, so this is why they call lands after their own names. Verse 12, nevertheless, man being in honor abideth not. He is like the beasts that perish. Like a dog. Okay, this their way is their folly, yet their posterity approve their sayings. Okay, and then he's got seal it. Now, when he throws that in there, the educated guess here is that he's applying this one who trusts in his wealth to the Antichrist and the people in the book of James. If you look in James chapter 5, I read about some guy, maybe these people know him, but I read about some guy who invested like $1 billion in some company, some stock. I don't know what it was. And since he did that, he's lost 700 million of the billion. Good for him. You see, actually, he didn't lose it unless he sold it, which he was going to do. He sold it. You don't really lose until you sell it. If you just hold on, you know, maybe to come back up, but who cares? Isn't it funny they call those stocks and bonds? Remember the old days, the stocks, they'd put them into stocks and they'd bind them? Stock age, yeah. Okay, James 5, verse 1. Not saying it's wrong to do that, it's just that you don't trust in it. James 5, verse 1. Go to now, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted, your garments are moth-eaten, your gold and silver is cankered. Oh, they have gold and silver. They must get rid of the fiat currency. You see, the big dogs, they get the real thing. They'll fight you over the real thing. A lot of them will say, you want to have one-third of your investment portfolio, one-third of it in gold and silver. So there it is. Your gold and silver is cankered or cancered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. Ye have heaped treasures together for the last days. Behold, the hire of your laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth, and the cries of them which are reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. Okay, now during the church age, 1 Timothy chapter 6, during the tribulation time period, a person definitely does not want to be rich. Because you have to be in the system, take the mark of the beast, the number, all that stuff. Okay, and so that's bad news. In the church time period, 1 Timothy chapter 6, this is the advice. Verse 17. And basically, many Americans can just apply this to themselves, because if you or I took the average person throughout the world, if you have a refrigerator at home with food stocked in there, you got more than a lot of people in this world. And if you're like us, where you have three freezers, because you're doing the fruit and vegetables a lot, then you're really wealthy. I mean, all this other stuff doesn't matter. When it gets down to an economic crisis, you know, it's food and things to barter with is what's important. That's what's very important. 1 Timothy 6, verse 17, he says, charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded. Okay, there's the advice. Nor trust in, notice he says, uncertain riches, but in the living God, who giveth us richly all things to feel guilty for, so that you can give to the liberals, so that they can buy the votes for other people. Okay, that's what Obama and company and all they want to do. You know, I can't stand hearing any of these clowns talk. I promise to do this. promise to stick your head in a bucket three times and pull it out twice, fella. Make the world a better place to live. Get out. Exit it. You know, if you're worried about overpopulation, practice what you preach. You know, and I tell you, these people are just habitual liars. And the Americans see that. A lot of them see that. And what do you do with them? You don't do much with them. Verse 18, it says, here's the advice, that they do good, that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute and willing to communicate, laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold in eternal life. Okay, and so that's the advice during the church time period. That's what's warned about in the tribulation time period. Okay, and then back into Psalm 48, and this looks like this Psalm 49 is subtly pointing at the Antichrist. And then, verse 14 and following, he seems to go more information about the tribulation. 49:14, like sheep they are laid in the grave. I don't know about anybody putting a sheep in a grave. I thought they eat them. Maybe it's a bad sheep. Okay, but like sheep they are laid in a grave. Death shall feed on them. You know, coyotes come out there and chomp on them. And the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. In the morning, second coming. And their beauty shall consume in the grave from their dwelling. But God will redeem my soul from the power of the grave. For he shall receive me. Second coming, Selah. Okay, the me there is probably the poor and needy of the tribulation time period. Verse 16, be not thou afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased. Okay, a lot of Christians that have some sense, at least a little bit of sense, you know, if Obama gets elected, they're gonna go ballistic. I mean, they're going to have a spiritual depression. Hey, the Lord is just setting a clown like that up so he could smack him later on. You know, he can land in hell just like any drunk on the street corner. You know, this guy's these people are just a bunch of little puppets, little pawns, and they don't mount a hill of beans. When he, it says, verse 16, be not thou afraid when one is made rich. Why? Because he's going to try to use his wealth to take from you or cause you all sorts of problems. Be not afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased. For when he dieth, he shall carry nothing away. They can't change that. You see, where you and I are told in the New Testament that we are to lay up our treasures in heaven. We can't take it with us, but we could send it out. Send it ahead of us. And when he dieth, he shall carry nothing away. A good cross-reference there is 1 Timothy 6 again, verse 6, 7, and 8. Came in this world naked, going out naked. Yeah, I know they put clothes on him and all that stuff, but still, that's the way it is. Okay, 1 Timothy chapter 6. Verse 6, but godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And then having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. I don't like that verse, food and raiment. That's tough on us Americans, isn't it? It says food and raiment, it didn't say food, raiment, and house or shelter. It just says food and raiment, be content. Okay, back in Psalm 49, verse 16. Be not thou afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased. For when he dieth, he shall carry nothing away. His glory shall not descend after him. Now, when Satan lands in hell, according to Isaiah 14, the people, the inhabitants of hell, will look at him when he comes and say, you made kings bow? You? You're just a worm like we are. That's all you are. And that's, he's like, it's like the Mr. Wizard on Wizard of Oz. You get to the end, you see all this flash and everything, it's just a bunch of hot air. Okay, and so carrying nothing out, verse 17. Verse 18, though while he lived, he blessed his soul. And men will praise thee when thou doest well to thyself. He shall go to the generation of his fathers, and they shall never see light. Man that is in honor and understandeth not. Man that is in honor, okay, political honor, religious honor, and understandeth not, he doesn't understand God, is like the beasts that perish. No different than a dog. Okay, the idea of understanding, if you would, let's see, Jeremiah 23, I think it is. I know it's 1 Corinthians 1. Let's see if I can get that. Maybe it's 9:23. That's what I'm thinking of. Jeremiah 9:23. I knew there was a 23 in there. There it is. Jeremiah 9:23. Thus saith the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might. Let not the rich man glory in his riches, but let him that glorieth glory in this, that he understandeth and knoweth me, that I am the Lord which exercise loving kindness, judgment and righteousness in the earth, for in these things I delight, saith the Lord. Okay, that's the verse that Paul quotes in 1 Corinthians 1, so that verse is pulled into the New Testament. So what can we glory in? Verse 24, that you understand the Lord, that you know the Lord, that he has made himself known to you, not just from somebody else, but to you personally. Okay, and hopefully that is a desire of your heart. Okay, so we'll stop there. Any prayer requests or comments or questions anybody have? Okay, I'd like to maybe about 10 after, a quarter after, have a quick business meeting. I got to bring up one quick thing. So.